just shit, but it didn't feel good.
Why not? I just saw what you ate. It was like the soupiest pizza. It was undercooked.
I was really rushing it. It has nothing to do with the pizza, dude.
Soupy butt.
What were you rushing?
I mean, I'm trying to be professional. I'm trying to get on this cast. I'm trying to record. So I had to pinch it off and fucking run. Also,
you're trying to be professional?
For the listeners out there, I just used a bidet for the first time, and it was terrifying, but also...
Did you?
Holy shit, you finally tried it? You had to be this drunk to try
Hell
the bidet?
Yeah. I finally bidet'd.
How
like,
did it feel, baby?
Horrifying. Like, I turned the little knob, and it was just like, man, and just started spraying my
That's
asshole.
Not horrifying. It feels
well,
good.
I thought
you
got to
get... It's a little bit of a surprise.
It is, but yeah. I thought it was only going to happen when I flushed, but it just straight up... attacked my asshole with the water and
well you had full control over that dial so you attacked your own asshole.
I also cranked it up, I'm gonna be honest.
You
I
cranked it
up
too
a little
high.
Bit
oh,
I cranked
no.
it up. My asshole was getting penetrated and
how
I,
clean do you feel though?
I feel filthy because there's still some more left inside me.
But at least you're
at least it's
clean.
Inside of you. That's fine.
I mean, this is absurd. It pre-cleaned, like it was pretty ready to go.
Guys, shut the fuck up. Seriously, you're already addressing the listeners. We haven't even done the fucking intro yet. So here we go. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Horrible Podcast, where we like to bring you a face value view on horror movies. Good luck, Manton, trying to edit that fucking intro in. That was ridiculous.
There's nothing to edit.
That is the most professional intro we could have gotten out of him.
Oh, Lord. It's week three, the final week, to where we're going to wrap up our horrible Olympics. If you don't know what that is, check out the last two episodes, because it's been a three-week event where we're reviewing countries and their respective horror films. And we're going to award a gold, silver, and bronze medal. Probably not this week, but next week we'll have that wrapped up for you guys.
We might have our gold.
We'll see. We'll figure it out. We're going to have to do another poll of some sort. But today we're going to talk about Wake and Fright out of Australia, Night Watch out of Russia, The Changeling out of Canada, and The Orphanage out of Spain, of course. I'm Devin, here with the co-host. Guys, I don't know if you see this, but I have my camera on. I'm waving at you guys right now.
I can see you, yeah. You look kind of cute. Yeah.
Okay, good.
I can't see anything.
Good, perfect. All right, whatever. Well,
that doesn't have to
that's
do.
His drunken.
I'm
drunk.
Just looking at a blank monitor. I can't
oh,
see
that's
it.
True.
I'm
oh,
sorry, yeah, Devin.
We don't have his monitor turned on.
Well, turn it on because it'll be better so we don't interrupt each other the whole time, which we do anyway.
It's not going to help with Blooster right now.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, but yeah, talk about that, Dylan. What's going on?
Oh, okay. So we just finished watching Wake and Fright, which, as you're going to see, this is just a delicious bit of irony. A movie about benders, and Blutster, our old boy here, is just falling all over himself drunk. This should be interesting. But you know what? Hey, buddy, I am really proud of your professionalism that you're even here and you're recording.
That's not the same tone that Dylan gave me when we were out there. I was ready. I was giving him hugs.
Dylan was taking a very dad tone.
Somebody had to.
Brandon, stop slouching in the chair. Brandon, sit up
he's
straight.
Like, sir, drink some water, sir. Sir, stop. Stop, sir.
I never called you sir.
Yeah, I don't deserve a sir.
Bloodster, tell us what's going on with you right now. What's the deal?
I mean, I deserve a brown medal. Like, we're talking about gold, silver, and bronze. I need that brown medal because I mean... I'm on that for shit. Sure. I'm on that shit tier. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be sitting up, and I'm glad to be drinking water. Wow. I feel a lot of different ways right now, Devin. I know you can't see it, but I'm rubbing myself. And
as if he has any doubt,
the shame is just reaching epic tears, buddy. I have no shame.
Say no more, and I mean say no more. Manton, what's up, dude?
Today's been a roller coaster of emotion. We watched Wake and Fright, which is like the most like sobering, literally like just watching people binge drink and the horrors of that, and then
the
watching Brandon do it in real life.
I went the other direction.
The movie turned off and I turned to Brandon and it was still happening.
Me and Dylan like looked at each other, we're like, we're never gonna drink again. Brandon's like, what do you mean, guys?
My friend came back from out of town finally, and we had some beers to share, so I'm
He kind of showed up and brought a lot of stuff, so Brandon, you know, he was trying to be a good guest host, I guess.
That's some good-ass beers, too. I don't blame you for drinking them.
I literally couldn't help myself. I just had to drink them. I mean, I didn't know what I was going to get into watching this movie. We'll talk about it, obviously.
For some perspective, I had a tall boy of Red's Wicked Ale, and I'm nowhere near your
which
level.
Is so good. Last time I brought a Red's Wicked to Dylan's apartment, I got shamed. Everyone was making fun of me to my face.
They're not making fun of the Reds. They're making fun of your reaction to the Reds.
Reds is a holy liquid, and
I'm not arguing this.
It's cheap, and it gets the job done.
You guys are making me super jealous. It's hard to drink over here. but there's a beer here that I told you guys. It's called Lake Placid Ubu, U-B-U.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so fucking good, dude.
Really?
I've been having that. Yeah, it's local.
Are you sure it's not just because that's the only thing you've got? So you're.
I haven't had a beer in 5 weeks. It's so
like the
good.
Australians and their Foster.
No.
Australian beer is piss. I'm sorry.
Ubu, it's Lake Placid for beer.
Poo-poo.
Nice. Well, we're going to actually kick it off with Wake and Fright. Right before we do that, I do want to just remind you guys, go to Horrible Podcast Patreon if you want to support us financially. It's patreon.com/horriblepodcast. We're on iTunes and Stitchers, so add us to your favorites, the best way to get to us, and rate us, please. Email and Twitter, send us emails, we'll get to them probably next episode and so on. And Twitter, @HorribleCast, that's how you can vote on our Horrible Olympics, and this is the most important week to do that, because we're gonna pound out?
Yeah, let's go with it, yeah.
Our gold, silver, and bronze winners. But yeah, we're gonna start off with Australia's Wake and Fright, I think from 1971.
Do we want to talk about our? We didn't talk about our winner from the last one.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Thank you for the reminder. Last week was week two, and we talked about Deep Red of Italy, Poltergeist from the U.S., The Descent from England, and Shudder from Thailand. Thank you so much for the reminder. So we had to get an ultimate winner from that pool, and I think it was pretty clear the cast favorite I imagine was Shudder. Don't you guys agree?
Absolutely.
I think it was. Yeah. Despite the fact that I did enjoy Deep Red, I think Shudder was my pick.
I didn't enjoy Deep Red, and Shudder is definitely my pick.
All right, so it was a close one, which is, I'm sure you guys have something to say on this, between Deep Red and Descent and Shudder, it was a pretty neck and neck.
They were tied for second, I think, right?
Yeah, I believe so. But
in the listener poll, yeah. So what we decided to do ultimately was we were going to have, you guys are going to count as one of us, basically. So we're going to take this as five of us. Sort of in the podcast. So you guys have
20%. Yeah.
We each have 20%. So you guys chose Deep Red, which I personally don't find to be too crazy. I know Dylan was a bit surprised by that.
Man is being very polite with you guys, but I'm going to say, what the fuck is wrong with you people?
Deep Red is disgusting.
That movie sucks.
I'm being honest here. I feel sick.
I don't want to blame our listeners. I still think a lot
do.
Of it is just random Twitter dudes who see it on their Twitter feed and vote for it because they're like,
sure.
Oh, Deep Red's the best horror movie ever made.
One of the people who listens and you voted for Deep Red, shame.
Blutster, I'm going to hand you the torch here. I'm going to keep using that fucking metaphor, by the way. But
it's Olympic. I get it. I like that.
I'm going to give it to you to announce who the winner was.
Well, so like we said, each of us counts as one. The polls was very, very tight, but eventually it came out to be, I think it was Deep Red from Italy, and I'm sorry, but you're wrong. The cast all unanimously agreed that Shudder is the unanimous winner, and I have to say that as soon as I watched this movie, I immediately went to Reddit and recommended this to people on Reddit. I had to tell them, they're like, oh, can I get some good horror suggestions?
Wait, you're talking about Deep Red or Shudder here?
Are you kidding me?
Okay.
Shudder.
Just clarify.
Shudder.
Yeah.
Deep Red, I will never mention again, but Shudder is a definite gem.
For
no,
sure.
Man, it's funny because Matt and I were actually talking about Deep Red, and there's a lot to love, but I just felt so frustrated by that movie. But Shudder for me was eye-opening. It showed me what could be in horror, and it was so good. I fucking loved it. And so Shudder is our gold medal winner.
I can't wait to see how it's gonna place in the finals here.
Well, I mean, it's overall
it's definitely a contender.
It's doing very well, so it's gonna be a tough fighter.
It's a sweet contender. I've been saying sweet a lot, by the way, which is funny.
That's so sweet
you say that.
I just said it's a sweet contender, but it's gonna be contending against another Asian film in Ju-On, The Grudge, whatever comes out of this group.
Now, to clarify, for our final one, Devin, it doesn't have to be the cast favorite, like the unanimous one, right? We could pick a spoiler to throw up into our final bronze, silver, gold, right?
Say that again?
So, like, if I don't know, one of us had chosen maybe not Ju-On, then it would go, we could put that in our personal gold, silver, bronze.
I believe the way we were going to work it out is it's going to be between Ju-On, Shudder, and whatever comes out of this group.
Oh, well, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, so, okay.
So anyway, we're going to figure that out soon. I got in mind what I think should come out, but we're going to get into it now and talk about Wake and Fright, then Night Watch, then The Changing and The Orphanage, starting off with Australia's Wake and Fright. And since there's four films, that means I have to give a synopsis. I'm obligated, and I'll try my best. But Wake and Fright's easy enough, so I'm going to start off with that. It's, I believe, from 71, early 70s for sure, out of Australia, kind of an art house thriller-type film with certainly horror elements. With our boy Donald Pleasance, who is notable for playing Dr. Loomis in the Halloween films. But Wake and Frights is a very interesting, a very sobering concept, ironically, as I guess Manton put it, I believe. But the concept is a guy basically just trying to visit his love interest in another town in Australia, where he has to take a bus or a train or whatever. But for some reason, he has to stop off into a little town before he gets there. So when he gets off at this town, it should be a normal pit stop. He's going to stay overnight, but he gets invited to this bar-type place. And what's the bar place called again? The Yaba or something?
The whole town's called Bundan Yaba.
Okay, anyway. He gets invited to this bar, and they're like, you have to go. If you haven't been there before, you have to go. And essentially what happens is he's finding it more difficult and more difficult exponentially to get out of this bar slash town because he's getting dragged in with booze and sex and
gambling.
All kinds of gambling and all kinds of bad stuff. He's literally losing all his money, and it's just this hilariously, like, fucked up, scary concept of a guy just trying to visit his love interest out of town but cannot get out of this middle town because it's so tempting with all these terrible, terrible things. So it's a very kind of like in-your-face concept that works, I think, quite well. Very effective, in my opinion. But that's Wake and Frights. What do you guys think about this film?
It's hyper-effective.
Yeah. So we just finished watching this one. And like we said, I mean, this is a movie about binge drinking and the horrors of excess. And, you know, turn around, Blitzer's still doing it. But after this movie, I genuinely felt like I never wanted to drink again. And I'm drinking a tall glass of water right now. It's fucking effective at showing us this.
It's interesting because, like, I've never seen a movie where, like, in every single scene, people are drinking constantly.
It's crazy.
And they're drinking, you know, like, just some standard beer. And, like, every single time that they're doing it, I'm like, please, someone just stop drinking. Someone stop drinking.
Well, the irony is, like, when we're kids, they show us movies like, kids, you shouldn't drink a lot. It's very dangerous, blah, blah, blah. This is the perfect movie for that.
Oh, God, yeah.
You actually see on screen how dangerous and how horrifying it is, and this is way more effective than whatever we watch when we were growing up.
Yeah, I feel like if you're going to have an intervention for an alcoholic, you just show this movie,
I'm sorry,
deed's
Dylan,
done.
It didn't work for me. I just went the other direction.
And, like, I think we're going to delve into this more, but I think that this movie does show, like, a deplorable side of humanity.
Oh, yeah.
I think that this movie, I think you can almost compare to something like Last House on the Left, whereas with that movie, I don't personally feel like it does a good job of, like, giving you this, like, view into depravity that this movie really does. And that's what's interesting about it, is that while it did make me feel sick, like, from moment one, I don't know exactly what it is.
It's so tense from the get-go.
From the very first, like, the movie starts out with, like, a perfectly fine setting. It's a bunch of kids waiting for the day to end at school. Our main character, who is a teacher, lets them out. They all rush out. It's very upbeat, and we have this very, very upbeat music. And we see our title screen, which is, you know, Wake and Fright. It shows up, very upbeat music. But even at this point, you know, you just get this sense of dread. Mm-hmm. You just know that something is going to go wrong. And from minute one, this is so, so tense.
I actually forgot about that scene. I love when the kids leave, because that's basically the moment the movie goes insane. As soon as the kids leave, it's like sanity just disappears from the screen.
You're watching someone's slow descent into depravity.
Well, I literally couldn't help but think of Dylan when this guy, like,
I did too.
And it was just like, well, here's summer break, and here comes all the fucking shit that comes with it.
I'll admit it. Like, summer break, yeah, I'm like, oh, crack open a beer. Let's get this thing started. But, like, I don't want to after watching this one. Like, my next summer is going to be super sober, I guess.
No beer for me. But we talk about a lot of times in horror, like, a lot of the terror comes from the human element, the people, the way they interact and stuff. This movie is just focused on one guy and him trying to do a very simple goal of going from one town to the next. And it's so horrifyingly challenging for him because he's constantly stuck in this town with these other people that are literally peer pressuring him, like, in the most definition of the word, to just drink beer and do nothing but get fucking wasted and just ruin himself.
Interestingly, the main character even says what I think perfectly exemplifies what this is. He says, aggressive hospitality. And I think that that really shows, like, what this movie deals with. It's like, these people constantly are like, you're broke? Well, then, here, the drink's on me. And he's like, no, it's cool. He's like, it's on fucking me. You're gonna drink it.
Well, yeah. People are so aggressive, you can't help but take it. I mean,
yeah, and it's such a very simple concept, and it's shit that we've heard, I think, in our lives. I know I have.
Oh, yeah,
where, like,
absolutely.
There's a really terrifyingly, like, real conversation where he was like, dude, I'm fucking broke. I have to apply for jobs. And the other guy's like, who fucking applies for jobs on a Saturday, dude? Places don't even open till Monday. Just crack open a beer.
You ain't got no job. You ain't got shit to do.
And it's just like, it's the awful version of Friday.
Yeah, right. But, yeah, on that same note, like, I think we can all sort of relate to, on top of that, like, being in like a situation, like a social situation that you don't want to be in.
Oh God.
And you don't like the people, but you're trying to be polite and you're trying to accept their hospitality.
Yeah, for me, that's the worst part. Like, there's a scene where one of the guys that he meets at a bar who literally pressures him into drinking a beer, like pretty much everybody else.
Are you talking about every scene, Dylan? Or
yeah,
just
but
this,
this guy who takes him to his house and he's like, you know, I guess he's trying to be nice, but then they're like, his damaged daughter comes on and like, clearly she's like not having a good
that was
time
his
living.
Wife.
No, it's his daughter.
Oh my God.
She says dad a couple times.
Oh, holy shit.
But, like, you know, she's clearly damaged from living in this town or whatever. And, like, he's trying to be nice, but the dude just wants to keep drinking beer and invites over, like, progressively worse and worse people. And he's just like, have a beer, mate. Have a beer, mate. Have a beer, mate. And it's this refrain. And you're like, oh, my God, please don't have a beer, mate. Like,
please drink some water.
Yeah, you are getting into something. You know something terrible is going to happen in this movie. And when it does happen, oh, God. Like,
well, I mean, it piles on. It's funny. There's one scene where he wakes up and he's just like, please give me some water. And the guy literally says, oh, you don't want Yabba Wada, mate. Have some beer. And he just gives him another beer. And yep. You're just like...
And you're like, don't drink it. And he does.
At this point, I'm already drunk. And I'm like, but please don't have another beer, dude. You don't need another one. You need some water. Everyone recognizes it.
It is incredibly stressful. Like, it just keeps compounding. And I'll say pretty much perfectly in the way that it's paced. Like, it's a slow movie. This is like a slow burn if ever there was one. And it's not super entertaining. Yeah. But for whatever reason, like, the progression of sin that he has here, like, it just gets worse and worse and worse. And that's what keeps you going.
For me, this movie is not boring. I wasn't bored
not at all.
A single second during this movie. I don't know about you guys.
I think it's because of how relatable it is. I mean, you've all been in a situation where someone's handing you a drink or something. And
you just want to go home.
It just gets to the point where you're kind of in the situation. It's like a social situation. It's too real. Like, a lot of times you watch a horror movie and it's supernatural. Like, mm-hmm. There's ghosts and shit. I've never experienced that. Whatever. I don't have to worry about it. This is just a situation where someone's handing you a beer and you drink it or you don't.
It's innately identifiable.
I think exactly. The horror of this movie, and it is horrifying.
How
and like,
real it is.
I definitely think we've all heard things about like whether this is horror or not. For me, it definitely is. This movie is terrifying.
For me, it's one of the scariest things we've watched for the cast.
Right. And
it
think,
can happen to us.
I think the reason is that like it shows how easily a normal person can right. slip into complete depravity.
Well, that's the funny thing about it.
I was going to clarify that it's certainly not viscerally scary in like in its images and stuff like that, but it's conceptually horrifying and that makes sense. So that's where I kind of teeter a little bit, because I think to be a pure horror movie, you got to have some visceral scares. So I would call it more of a thriller art house film.
But I think it kind of does, Devin, in a couple of places, like when the camera work starts getting super loopy and like disjointed.
Yeah, I do love that.
There's the fight scene between him and the guy in the cabin. That is just really hard to watch, even though it's like,
I'm not completely disagreeing
dudes.
With you guys. I actually do think it has elements of horror.
Well, there's specifically one scene that we have to bring up here, and this goes as kind of a warning, because I think it's a really effective scene.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
But at the same time, it's pretty reprehensible that it's on screen. Devin warned us about this one ahead of time, because he was the first, I think, to watch it. And essentially said, like, there is a kangaroo snuff scene in this, and you're not wrong. Like, they slaughter kangaroos. Like actual kangaroos on screen.
And Dylan is not exaggerating that word. Never have I gone from loving or being so excited to watch a movie to being so terrified to watch a movie right. as this one. But
oh, the dread was mounting from before we watched it.
There's a scene, and you can tell when it's coming up, but they just slaughter kangaroos on screen, and it made me feel sick.
Gunning them down, they're twitching in piles. Like,
it's
stabbing
really
them.
It's really fucked up.
It's awful to watch.
I mean, I want to say that it's effective in the movie, but to like what end? I don't know if scene was worth it.
No, it's effective. It's effective, but it could have been just as effective with practical effects and
or
fake
with different cuts. Like, if they had just not shown that actually happening, I think they actually could have done just as good of a job.
They just show kangaroos getting shot and dying.
I do think it is important to point out that, like, what they did is they followed this, like, hunting crew, like a kangaroo hunting crew. And apparently the people that were filming this, like, they were so disturbed by this that they, like, left early and stuff. But they did get this footage. And I, even at the end of the movie, it says, like, they went to, like, sort of, like, this board of, like, animal welfare and stuff like that. And they're like, should we show this? And, like, before I watched this movie, I was ready to say that, right. like, I completely abhor this. But I also
kind of think... It has its place.
It does kind of have its place, because I think that it goes to show, you know, these are people that are just going out there and, like, senselessly killing these animals essentially for fun. And I think that it is important to keep in mind that, like, this it really happened. This is real.
Yeah, it's something different from the likes of the one that always gets dropped, the Cannibal Holocaust, like turtle slaughtering, which is the camera crew themselves, like, you know, making somebody do this.
Right.
In this case, they are like,
or that
it's
one...
a fine line. They're actually following somebody who is already doing this.
Right.
And I'll say the cuts are really clever, that, like, it never feels like it's anybody other than the characters doing it, which makes it all the more disarming. It's fucking hard to watch.
Absolutely. Yeah, that doesn't change the fact that like it is so it is gut-wrenching to watch. And
but it's still not the most gut-wrenching thing about the movie somehow.
Somehow it's not. Yeah. It's through its characters and through its like it is like a ride. It is like watching someone that you can sort of identify with slip into madness.
I feel like this was the movie that would be better titled The Descent than The Descent. Like,
right.
This is just,
that's true, yeah.
It's just one man slipping.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's what's funny there's so much to take in here.
Well, then with that, let's go ahead and give a review. I feel like we said quite enough on it. Mm. So who wants to kick it off? We want to start off with the drunkest of us all? Bluchster?
Oh, thanks, buddy.
Wake and fright, buddy.
So, yeah, I got into character for this movie. I was ready to review it. And
he's a yabba man.
I've been hearing about this for years. Directors have suggested this to us directly.
Oh, yeah, we should say that. Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead of Spring.
I don't think
and
they're
Resolution.
The only ones who did. I think somebody else directed.
I think a couple
No, they're the first.
But whatever. But people have recommended this to us.
Yeah.
I've seen this on Reddit. I've seen this movie mentioned just not even in horror circles, just in movie circles as a great movie to watch. And I will say that this movie is good. It's effective. And it's damn effective for a movie that has nothing about like supernatural elements or any otherworldly terror. Like, this movie is very human, very real.
Yeah.
And I love the way at the beginning of the movie, the character starts and he's at school and he's just anxious. He's ready to go. He's ready to go on an adventure and do some stuff. And we've all been there. Like, we want to get out of town and we want to experience new shit. And then you realize how terrifying the fucking world is. And this guy quickly goes to another town nearby and he realizes he's in a fucking hellhole. He's stuck there. He gets broke. And I think this movie is great. And I want to say the only knock I really have against this movie is the violence against animals. Yeah. Like, I'm not an animal rights activist. I don't fucking go out and try to, I don't know, protect endangered species. I'm not that kind of guy. But just watching, I don't know, going out and making a movie is one thing, but having to injure other creatures to do it, I think is unacceptable. So, like, I like this movie, and I think it was really cool and effective, but that's a huge stain against me. So I'll give this like a light. I think I'll give it a light, Jim. Mm-hmm. I could see myself recommending this movie. It's super horrific to watch, but that one scene is such a stain for me that it's hard for me to like recommend it objectively, like 100%.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. I kind of align with you in that. I think this movie's fantastic conceptually, one of the better concepts in horror film or thriller cinema, what have you. It's incredible. I think most people can relate to it. Anybody who's had a drink can relate to it. I can say, like, I've been in this situation on both ends just this summer where I'm the one convincing a guy to drink another beer, or I'm the one who's being convinced to stay out even though I have no money. So it's just very real, which makes it all the more effective. That's incredible. I completely agree with Bluchster, where unfortunately when I look back on this movie, I get a sick feeling, not because of its concept mostly, but because of that one scene. I get a little pit in my stomach, and that's hard for me to shake, and that's a huge bummer. So I do think that scene, albeit is effective, I think it was a poor choice, a poor decision. I don't think they should have had it, or at least executed it, emphasis on execute, the way they did.
Ooh, harsh.
But other than that, the film altogether is a good film, and it's a very, very, very interesting watch and an awesome addition to, I guess, Australian horror thriller cinema, with the one terrible caveat of a scene that I think should not have been in it, or at least should have been done differently. So I give it a light, Jim, as well, and I think it's a huge recommendation on my part, but I still am kind of upset about that one scene. What do you think, Dylan?
I don't disagree with anything you guys are saying, yet at the same time, going in, I never would have thought I was going to say this, but I actually somewhat feel like that kangaroo scene was kind of justified. The way that it works is really effective in the movie. It's horrifying. I won't apologize for it. But it is definitely a part of a movie that I think is overall put together pretty flawlessly. It's a different kind of horror in that it makes you feel every single bit of what the protagonist is feeling, more so than something like a slasher. I don't feel like I'm getting stabbed. I don't feel like I'm getting, you know, eviscerated by an alien. But in this one, sure, I feel horrible because I'm watching something horrible happening. And it's incredibly relatable. It's something I haven't seen done anywhere else before. It's a strong recommendation from me, but at the same time, it's probably one I'll never rewatch because it made me feel terrible. So I'm actually going to give it a strong gem and say that I think it should be required watching, but I don't know that everybody's going to like it.
No, I completely agree, Dylan.
Manton, what do you think?
First off, I want to say, Devin, I'm so glad you picked this as the first movie, because like I wouldn't have the energy to do this as the last one.
Yeah.
At first I was like, why would we do this first? But now I'm like, thank God. I don't really know where I fall on like the particular scene in question. Like, I'm someone that like I definitely have kind of gone back and forth between like eating meat and stuff, so I am sort of like an animal lover on that sense. And from that perspective, like, that is hard to watch, but I do also think that like it's important to see. I think people should see that. And I think people should see this movie in general. I think that this movie shows like what just how easy it is for one person to go from one way to being another way. And I think that the takeaway is that this could be anybody. This could be any of us. And I think that that definitely is a horrifying concept. This movie is very, very good. I think I was looking into this movie a little bit. Saw on like Rotten Tomatoes, it's got like 100% or something. And I think that that's justified. I think this movie, it very, very, very effectively, expertly executes what it means to do, which is to scare you and make you feel sick and make you think this could be me. So on that, I'm going to have to give it a gem. I don't think this is something that, you know, everyone, I couldn't recommend this to a lot of people for sure.
Yeah, that's true.
But I would say that if you think you can handle it, it is worth viewing. It is absolutely worth viewing because you'll think about it for a long time afterwards.
Yeah, I don't think any one of us would disagree. So that's four gems for Australia's Wake and Fright, which is going to bring us to Russia's its film, which is
the polar opposite.
Yeah, the literal opposite.
Interesting. It's called Night Watch. We had trouble finding a Russian candidate, but this one is what we got. It's Night Watch, and I'm going to be very candid and say that I've been incredibly busy here, and it's been difficult for me to watch films in general. So this is one that I don't feel like I saw enough of for me to give my a gym or stinker rating. So I'm going to leave it up to you three. I'll give some input here and there if I can, but I was not able to watch this in
full.
Look,
I'll take
so
this one off your hands. I didn't finish it either.
Go
but
for it.
I'll give it my best shot.
Thanks, guys.
Go ahead, Dylan.
So, Night Watch is kind of a mid-2000s movie from the guy who ended up directing Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which fucking blows. And this movie is the budget Matrix done in Russia, but also a fantasy, like, giant world-building war between light and darkness bullshit. Very hard to follow at points, but also very clear at other points. Mm-hmm. Kind of a mixed bag of a movie. But we start with a you know, synopsis of the war of light and dark that started between the others, the light others and dark others. And they had a truce where they were like, oh God, we're going to kill each other, so let's stop this and police each other, with the light side having the night watch and the dark side having the day watch that keep each other in check. The dark side includes like vampires and bullshit, and the light side has like shapeshifters and fuck all. I don't
They're like X-Men, basically.
Yeah, maybe.
Such a great analysis.
We go into the modern day with this guy named Anton, who's going to a witch who is going to abort his unfaithful wife's baby, which is like fucked up way to introduce your protagonist. But he gets stopped in the middle of it and then sees the night watch, the police, like tackling this woman and taking her into custody. And suddenly he has been labeled as an other and can see things. Then we get a kid getting a nosebleed, walking out of a pool, getting summoned by a vampire. Years later, Anton is chasing after that kid because he is now like a Night Watch cop himself. And he has to drink blood to do it, and goes and like kills a vampire, which is against the law or something.
This
and
is then, slipping into insanity. I can
and then,
tell. That's the movie,
and then there's an owl woman who teams up with him. And then there's a plane that's getting fucked up, and he sees a woman who has like a spiraling curse above her head and is going to bring about the end of the world. And I don't know.
Dylan, that was beautiful.
I mean, yeah. There is a lot of shit in this movie because it is the beginning of a trilogy, clearly.
At its core, this is like a vampire movie, but imagine like your average vampire movie, like something like Underworld, but with way more lore.
Also Matrix.
Yes. Also, well, Underworld is pretty much Matrix.
Well, so one of the things that I think is most interesting about this movie is the like editing that generally, like in the 2000s, you had like that slick kind of quick editing and everything. And it is in this one, but like to the nth degree. It's bonkers batshit editing. It's hard to tell what's going on sometimes. But I do kind of find it really intriguing because it's something that I haven't really seen outside of like a music video.
So I think that the best way to like characterize this movie is it is like watching a graphic novel.
For sure. It's really
this movie is like watching a comic book, maybe even more so than most like comic book movies.
Yeah, for sure. It feels like it's got those like those panel jumps and the cuts between things. Like it's frenetic.
Something
as
something
fuck.
That immediately threw me off pretty quick was like there's a scene where one of our characters, the witch that you brought up earlier, is talking to Anton,
and subtitles.
Her subtitles start like dripping off. And at first I was like, what the fuck? Did you just see that? Did you just see what just happened there? But it kind of does that throughout the movie.
They
incorporates
do some clever
the
things
subtitles.
With the subtitles.
That's one thing right. I actually really like about the subs is they're like really fluid and they go between the scenes and it kind
of
like...
They're part of the action.
Yeah, exactly. It has its own moment in the movie.
If like nothing that. Else, you can say that like this movie is painstakingly, lovingly edited.
It really is.
Like I know... Dylan said that, you know, this is kind of like that manic editing.
It's MTV style.
But it feels like some like very, very, very purposeful. It doesn't feel like they were editing to sort of hide anything or change anything.
No,
it
feels
so well planned.
I don't
like
know that it's well done exactly, but it's not out of place. Like it fits.
I think it's
doing.
Well done for what it is.
I would say it's well done, but it seems out of place. There's a lot of times where you're watching a scene and you're like, okay. They're going to give me some concrete shots
That's
here.
That's true.
And I'm going to really understand what's going on. And they immediately start like doing hyper close-ups and crazy text flying on the screen
that,
and they shoot around.
That
like,
fight scene between him and the vampire with scissors is so fucking weird because like it's not really a cool fight scene, but they're cutting it like it is the coolest fucking thing
you've
ever seen.
But it is
kind of And that
cool.
kind of makes it cool.
There's a lot of energy in the editing, but the scenes don't necessarily follow it. And so like... You get to a point where you don't even know what's happening on screen.
No,
sometimes you're just
fucking insane.
Your eyes just hurt. Please just give me some normal.
In the first few moments, like when this main character is going to talk to the witch, when she gets kind of like taken in by these cops, it's like the most. Your brain starts hurting because what happens is one of the people comes in and then turns into a fucking tiger, and like she's trying
slaps
to
a pan
she's
through her
trying
hands.
To clap and she doesn't let her clap by putting a pan between her hands and it
this
burns
is just
her hands
a warm up.
And it's just like you just look around the room and you're just like, what does anyone understand? Does anyone fucking understand?
But at
a single
the same
thing?
Time, it's kind of cool to look at. Like I gotta say, for a mid-2000s movie, which is The Dead Zone as far as we're concerned, it's a pretty good looking movie, like, and especially for a Russian import.
It also
a lot of the CG
fall,
is dated, but it does work.
It doesn't fall into a lot of the common pitfalls, like it's gonna have like weird green or yellow hues. It like looks very crisp and clear and it looks very like well done, but there's a definite style here that's
it's poorly
hard to
directed
place.
But it's got really good art direction.
Honestly, it reminds me of like if a 13-year-old like had a creative writing class and they were like, all right, write a cool story for us. Yeah. This is what he would write.
The story is fucking insanity. It doesn't make any sense.
And it for me, it almost kind of works on like a Resident Evil kind of way. Yeah. We talked about Resident Evil recently, where it's like it's so fucking absurd, it's so cheesy that you kind of can't help but enjoy it.
We're talking about the second one here. The first one is so boring, I can't imagine. How
right,
you
and
would.
And so for me, I think I'm gonna kind of like think about it. You know, like how does this compare to a kind of like those style
as
of movies like Resident Evil?
Well, that's kind of where I want to go. So we talked about how insane the shit is and how it's pretty legit or whatever. It looks good, but like
it's not a good movie.
I want to talk to you all. So. There's a lot of lore on this movie. It's insane. It starts out with a huge plot dump where they talk about light versus evil. There's a huge battle.
There's a medieval battle.
We're talking about knights in armor and fighting each other. And there's so many scenes in this movie where they reference that and they bring it back up, but they just tell you. They just say, hey, this happened.
That's the thing is like on paper, the plot's actually really cool. Like the lore that they're setting up between the light and the dark and this war that's going on for eternity, very neat. But the way that they do it is they have these periodic plot dumps that just don't work. Like
they
there's just somebody
you.
Telling you this and you're like, stop doing that. Show me how it works. Like, because when
weird.
You do that, it's really entertaining.
It's weird because this movie seems very competent. They didn't need to do that, but they just tell you a lot of what's happening. And it gets to the point where you're kind of overloaded.
Well,
you're just saturated.
That's the other problem is that this is a... So when you're going to make like a series of movies or a trilogy or something like that, you need to not know that going in. I think that ruins a movie. Like you get the Star Wars prequels, right? Which knew they were going to be a trilogy. Ooh. Suck. The Hobbit movies knew they were going to be a trilogy. Suck. This movie knew it was going to be a trilogy. Kind of sucks, to be honest. Like there's so much going on and so many plot threads that it is impossible to keep it.
You need to be confident that you know your movie can stand alone. And this movie almost could. It almost could.
But it's 2 hours and change.
It is long.
There's a middle section where all that frenetic editing and stuff that you really like just stops for a second. And it's just like following the kid. When they bring the kid in, this shit gets so fucking boring. Like they're just explaining things to him. It's those plot dumps over and over. It is really hard to watch.
Yeah, but on another note, we have scenes of a PlayStation 2 game
which was tight.
That a guy is playing.
It's my favorite part of the movie.
Seriously, literally, not like you know, sort of like a metaphorical prediction. Literally predicts the end of the movie. You've got like someone Mortal Kombat style ripping their own spine out of their body and using it as a sword. That's not just the video game. That happens in the real life.
Because I didn't get to finish the movie because of time constraints. But that part is my favorite.
Wait, so two of you assholes didn't even watch the movie?
I didn't see like the last 15 minutes.
All right, I watched the whole thing. But no,
I saw it.
That scene is amazing because it is the big bad guy or whatever is like playing a fighting video game from the PS2 era of himself fighting the protagonist.
We're not joking.
And like he does it various times to see if he wins or loses. And it's insane to watch.
So he's like using it as this predictive device.
But they're treating it so fucking seriously.
But guys, here's the thing. treating it so seriously, like I kind of buy it. I kind of buy into it.
Almost.
And it's so fucking dumb and it's so absurd, but I sort of enjoy it.
Well, I don't know. I get you, and I think that stuff is funny, but like this is starting to happen by the middle of the movie where we're introducing the kid and mm-hmm. stuff, and I'm thinking, like, I've already watched this movie for an hour and 20 minutes.
Right, I want something to just
resolve. We're just now bringing in this kid, we're developing the plot even more, and they have so many threads going at once. I'm like, I'm trying to think, how on earth are they going to resolve
this in 40 minutes? The pacing of this movie is just piss poor. Moment to moment, I think this movie is super enjoyable, but like in the moments that it's not working, those just stretch on for too long, and they're just placed in really weird places.
I think we all said it kind of in our chat, but this movie is just trying to do so many goddamn things that...
So overambitious.
Are they competent? Like, can they handle all these threads they're trying to do?
I don't know.
I don't know. I just felt overwhelmed by the end of it, and I felt... I don't know. I felt kind of bad because it's a good movie. When
sounds
you're
like
just,
a review.
Well, let's review it. Yeah.
When you're just watching it, but yeah.
All right. Who's going
guys,
first?
Go ahead. Again, I'm not going to give it an actual review because I didn't see it. That's not fair. But Manton, what do you think?
So this movie is super, super hard to review. Because on one hand, I did kind of enjoy it. It is quite long. But I don't know. I think that did this movie make me want to see Daywatch? I would say yes. And so I think that on that level, it's a success. This movie is absolutely fucking insane. While you're watching it, you'll have no fucking idea what's going on. But afterwards, you'll look back on it and be like, well, now that I've seen the rest of it, I kind of understand certain things from the beginning. And, you know, I'm somewhat invested in this plot, in this lore, just in the same weird Stockholm Syndrome way that I am with Resident Evil. So, I'm going to actually give this a light gem. I think it's kind of a fun watch. And it's something that I want to see the rest of them.
It's interesting that you say that, though, because I'm going to jump off that because I don't want to see Daywatch just because if I know it's going to be another 2 hour and change movie, like I don't know how much of that I can handle. But at the same time, I'm not mad at this movie. Like there are parts of this that I find really entertaining. It is batshit. It is impossible to follow in a lot of ways. And like some of the scenes just don't work. But there is like a lot of love in this movie. There is actual craft in something that really shouldn't have craft in mm-hmm. it. And it's a strange mix that in the moments that it works, I think it shines really bright. In the moments that it doesn't, it's utterly forgettable. I do think, though, that those moments that don't work overshadow the ones that do. So I do have to give it a light stinker. I still think it might be worth watching. It's a good I'm really drunk. Let's watch this movie. So.
All right. Brandon, what do you think?
So, as a drunk person, I'm going to say that watching this drunk would not be fun because... Okay.
I'll take your word for it.
One thing I want to highlight is that I have to laud the creators of this movie because they're very confident in their lore and in their craft. Like, they'll show you something and they don't hesitate about it. They just show it to you and they just assume you're gonna understand it and love it and they just keep playing off of it. And they keep showing you more stuff. But it gets to the point where halfway through the movie, you've been shown so many things and mm-hmm. so many things have happened that you're wondering what's actually significant. And, like, by the end of the movie, there's so many different threads going on, and there's so many different things going on. I actually didn't understand how they were going to end them all in the last 20 minutes of the movie. I'm like, oh, my God, there's 5 things happening. How are you going to close this out?
One of the ways they end one of the threads is absolute horse shit, I want to say.
Exactly. Anyway. I don't know. And I was watching this movie, and I'm like, damn, this is actually pretty good. I mean, they're doing some crazy stuff, but I'm on board, but... I don't know. It gets a little too insane, a little too wayward. I wasn't really jiving it. And by the midpoint and the end point, I was a little, I don't know if I would say I was bored, but I kind of gave up. Yeah. I felt like I'd eaten all my pizza. I didn't eat any more, you know, I felt a little sick. And so I kind of wanted it to end. You know, you look at it and you have a bad feeling about it. Like I shouldn't eat that last slice. And so
that's perfect.
This movie is a light stinker. I would say that if you want to check it out, maybe we'll give it a look. It's not a bad movie, but it's so hard to recommend. I don't really know who would watch it. It's fucking insane.
I can't believe that they tried to make this a crossover hit. Like, they released this, I remember, in theaters in America. Wow. And I just don't know how they expected this to work. Like, it's so fucking
Except
weird.
It kind of did. It's pretty popular.
You can see that in the movie. It is confident as fuck.
Yeah.
They do scenes that are like, oh yeah, they're going to fucking love this
and
action
some
scene.
Some of those scenes I fucking love.
It's a very confident movie. I'll give it to him. But it's a light stinker for me.
Okay, all right, that's pretty funny. Let's talk about the Changeling now out of Canada, its representative. So if I could get... Dylan, did you already give a synopsis? You already did.
I took that bullet.
That's okay. I'll give it to Bluester. Can you handle it?
Oh, I'm ready, Papa. I've had like 20 minutes to get ready, dude. I'm feeling good. So Changeling, straight out of Canada. Funny story, I've actually seen this, forgot about it, and now I've seen it again. And
it is funny because we were watching the movie and Brandon's girlfriend Kelsey was like, "Brandon, we've watched this, we've seen this." He's like, No way.
That's not how it went.
An hour into the movie, he was like, "Oh yeah, so now this is gonna happen." I was like, "How did you forget this entire movie?"
This is the
I feel like I want to say I think this is one that we watched when you were so drunk you were face down on the couch.
This is an embellished story. All these are just a facade. I watched this with Kelsey before she was living at the house, and I was watching the opening scenes. I'm like, I think I've seen this before. I recognize this, but I couldn't remember anything that happened in this fucking movie. But no doubt, I've seen it before, and now I've seen it again. Anyway. The Changeling out of Canada. We are on a road trip with a man, his wife, and their lovely daughter. It's a happy family. They're doing great. They get a flat tire on their car or some other car problem. So they pull over to the side of the road. They stop, and he's like, "I'm going to be the great man in the relationship. I'm going to go call for help." And so he goes to a local payphone. The kid, the wife and the kid are playing and just, you know, just prancing merrily. He looks really happy. And all of a sudden, they get hit by a fucking semi truck, and they die. And so the husband is grief struck. We fast forward a few years or however long, a little time, and he is a I guess a composer. He makes music, and he's also a teacher. He's trying to move on from this tragic accident of his wife and daughter dying. He's clearly very sad about that because he told us. And so he's a famous producer. He buys a house in a local town. He moves to, I think it's Seattle, Washington. He buys a giant historic mansion in town, and some weird happenings start happening to him. One of his daughter's like toys comes back to him and starts like rolling around the house, and he thinks that maybe ghosts are inhabiting this mansion he's living in. So he takes help from the local, I guess, historic society to try and understand, hey, who's lived in this house before me? Why are there so many ghosties and ghoulies and spookies? And he finds out that there's a deep history in this house, and ultimately, for whatever reason, he is going to be the one responsible with uncovering this dark mystery. And so that's it.
Nice review. I want to specify first and foremost that there's a Changeling that came out with Angelina Jolie recently.
One.
This is not that, and it's completely unrelated. This is the Changeling from 1980. So there, just to make sure people don't get that confused. But anyway, Dylan, I know this is one that you're pretty high on. Talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I actually didn't get to rewatch this one this week. It was just a hellacious week, but I've seen it enough times that I can speak pretty confidently on it. And I'm sure that you guys aren't going to be as high on it as I am, but a lot of that has to do with one of my favorite types of horror movies, which is specifically like old creaky house vengeance ghost movies. Like, I really like movies in which a ghost that was wronged in the past tries to get some sort of revenge and somebody's along for the ride. Just a sucker for them. I think this is a really good one of those. It's shows its age. I will be the first to admit that it is. It's not aged super well, but it's conservative enough in the way that it tries to execute its scares that I think it works really well.
No, I didn't want to like. I was making some cracks on this movie, and I want to say it's a good movie, but I always have this weird problem with these powerful male characters in these old 80s or before movies. They're like, I'm going to get the job done. I'm a powerful male. Well,
and you've got the ultimate powerful male. This is George C. Scott, who was fucking Patton in Patton. Like, this is the alpha male.
Exactly. He's a badass. But I don't know. I have this weird problem, like, understanding why he's doing things. Like, he says he's sad. He doesn't look sad. He looks like a normal ass
dude.
Some
of the motivations are a little weird.
And then, for whatever reason, he takes up the mystery of this house, which he has no relation to whatsoever. They do a great job of establishing him as a character. He's an artist, he's a teacher, all this stuff.
I think he's pretty good in the movie.
No, he is really good. And then halfway through the movie, they're just like, okay, now that we've established him, fuck him, let's talk about the mystery.
Yeah.
Which is cool, but I didn't understand why they needed to do that. Like,
I think there is a through line, and I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say that the ghost that he inevitably finds in this house is a child's ghost. that it is, it's a child that was wronged in its past and is trying to get back. And that's why he keeps seeing like his daughter's toys and everything. And that's, I think, the through line of, you know, him missing his daughter, missing his wife.
I think he feels like he sort of has to take care of this because he can relate to the story behind it.
It's his paternal instinct, I guess.
I just wish they did more to connect it.
I can see that.
They do a lot of building up of him feeling bad about his daughter and his wife. I guess he doesn't care about his wife. She died, whatever. But, oh, my daughter, she loved this little ball, whatever. And so they do a great job of building that up, and then like I said, a third of the way or half of the movie, they just never talk about it ever again.
But I'll say, I think that mystery is really compelling. Like the mystery behind the ghost is really well realized.
Yeah.
So I don't mind that George C. Scott is just kind of a vessel for it, and that he's just kind of pushed to the background.
I don't mind either. In fact, I think I don't know if Brandon and I are on the same page. Maybe we are, maybe we're not. But like, I find the main character to be utterly boring and uninteresting, and I just do not care one tiny, tiny iota about this character.
No, I agree.
And so for me, that's my biggest gripe. There's a lot to like in this movie. Like, I really love the mystery. And this movie really, really took a lot of turns that I didn't expect.
Yeah.
Like, when we finally know what the changeling refers to,
it's really
genius.
Cool.
Like,
really cool.
I honestly would say genius. But I just do not care about the main guy. No, I just don't.
That's one thing I want to give this movie, is the mystery is so, so cool.
Yeah.
And just deep, like as he uncovers it, we feel like, yeah, I can't believe we discovered that. It's one of those movies where you're seeing the mystery unfold and you feel like you're part of it.
Right. Yeah. Does a good job of that.
Yeah. There's
sure.
nothing worse than watching a mystery movie and just feeling like, okay, fuck it. Yeah. I already knew that.
I mean, it's a matter of like, it's a great kind of Creaky House movie in that sense where like, he's like knocking down walls to find crazy stuff behind them. And like,
unlike Deep Red, where he has a 30 minute scene devoted to
tearing
knocking
down the fucking wallpaper. God damn it. No,
not like that.
It's not like that. It's really well paced, well done. It's
a
slow movie, but it is really good at establishing the mystery.
Guys, I've got something really important to talk about here.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Before we go into our reviews or anything, I really want to point this out. So usually when we watch these movies, especially ones that I think that I might really like, I like to take as many notes as I can. So in this movie, I got a bit distracted. I didn't take too many notes of what the movie did, but I did take a lot of notes of what Brandon was saying while watching the movie.
Oh, boy.
So he wasn't quite to this level that he is tonight, but he was in rare form. So I'm going to go ahead and read some of those quotes to you guys. Now this guy has got dad ass. D-A-D ass. I bet he's got dad-aria. Just imagine those wilted cheeks just...
Oh, my God.
In my defense,
wilted
hold on,
cheeks?
No, no, no.
That's
you can
horrible.
Defend, you can defend yourself later. Just imagine Michael Douglas fucking Mr. Rogers. The house is reaching into my blouse and it's turning me on. Papa's in my house, Papa's in my blouse. Hold on, we're not done. I died a virgin. Eternal thirst unquenched.
That's a reference to the kid in the
wheelchair. No, you stop it. Hold on. Why is this cone of Dunshire in the middle of the table? I want to see that hot dad sausage. And lastly, after this movie, you can call me Michael Dumpling.
Okay.
I don't know.
Let's set the record straight.
Those are just
here.
Verbatim quotes.
So when the movie starts, clearly this dude looks like a Michael Douglas like reject. Like he wants to be Michael Douglas, but he hasn't quite gotten paid
Michael
enough.
Douglas wishes he was George C. Scott.
Dude, Michael Douglas is hot. You check yourself. Anyway, so the whole time I'm thinking, okay, this is Michael Douglas, whatever. He's pretty hot. And then there's a scene where he has this hot sweater on. And I'm like, wait, this dude's trying to be Mr. Rogers. Except he can't afford to be Mr. Rogers. He's just singular Mr. Rogers. He's Mr. Roger, okay?
I'm sorry, are you trying to defend yourself or are you digging
this
yourself
is not
deeper?
Dude, I'm defending my suggestion here. So he's Mr. Roger and Michael Douglas, and he's just the budget version.
None of that made any sense.
God damn it. Devin, you say something here.
Well, can I just vouch for the fact that Michael Douglas is hotter? I wouldn't have said this a few weeks ago, but I can say it confidently now because camp's about to end.
God,
but
I hope a kid walks up behind you while you're saying
so
this.
I know, right? I was looking after Michael Douglas's son and Catherine Zeta-Jones's son at camp.
Son
so I was the liaison between the parents and the son. So I met Michael Douglas multiple times in person and called him on the phone multiple times.
Did you
times.
Call him Michael Douglas or Michael Dadass?
I called him Michael Dadass. But he gave me a big old fat hug, and it was, oh
fat
my God,
sausage.
I melted in his arms. It was wonderful. So
that's really
I
nice.
Can definitely vouch for that.
Everything
but
nice.
Anyway, I got more stories to talk about that. Promised, I did say I would talk about that stuff on the Shoot the Shit episode when we get back together. So definitely subscribe to our Patreon and get that, because I have a lot of cool stories.
Tell us about the changeling. Shut up.
All I can think about what Devin's saying is the sexual innuendo. I melted in Michael Douglas's arms. I just imagine Douglas just grabbing Devin's girth and just.
I don't care if we're getting off on a tangent because he's.
Oh, we're getting off on. He's that, fucking Devin. Awesome. Don't worry about that,
so,
buddy.
Let's review this.
Let's review the movie before we get on the tangent.
He fucks.
All right, that's your review. There we go.
Looster's review. He fucks.
Jesus Christ.
All right, what else does he does well, he does he fuck Stinker or does he fuck Jem?
Is this my review?
Yeah,
this
is your review. Come on, dude.
Okay,
the changeling.
First and foremost, Michael Douglas fucks. Let's establish that. Also, this dude's got sweaters. He looks like Mr. Rogers Singular. He can't afford the he can't afford the S. The dude in this movie's pretty hot. I mean, so,
give us your goddamn review.
God.
In my defense, there's a lot of scenes where they show him from behind and all we see is his butt.
Why is that a defense?
I just want to establish.
We get it. You want to fuck this guy. That's fine, dude. That's but what is your... butt, what is,
you
is
want
this a
strong alpha male to take you in his arms and show you dead ass.
God, take me. This movie, it is a... Let's just get out of the way. It's a light gem. It's okay.
All right.
Thanks. All right. Good. Nope. You're done. You're
Hold
cut
up.
Off. You're
That's
cut
good.
Off.
I'm gonna go off of that.
Let me get my just
cut
off.
You're cut off.
I'm going off of what Brandon said, and I'm gonna say that this movie is also a light gem because it's not Michael Douglas, and Michael Douglas fucking rules, and he's hot, and I love him,
and he fucks.
And he fucks. So that's my review. Light Jim, I don't hate it. I don't love it. It's fine. It's pretty cool. But it doesn't have Michael Douglas, so fuck it. What do you think, Dylan?
I think this is still one of my favorite creaky ghost movies. I mean, I'll tell you that I should quit fucking stroking yourself over there. I'll admit that like this is my wheelhouse. This is the kind of movie I love. So it may not be the best, but I still really like it. I still think it's a strong gem.
All right, what do you think, Manton?
I'm going to give this one a light gem because Michael Douglas fucks.
Yes, I love the reviews. Christ. Let's fucking go from there. And we're going to wrap it up with The Orphanage out of Spain.
You better get your shit together before you talk about this, Blutster.
I know. Nobody fuck around with this movie.
I feel like the orphan on this cast, dude. I'm ready for this.
This one is so fucking important to me. It's so special for me. But I'm going to hand the honors over to you, Mantron, to give us a synopsis of The Orphanage from 2000-something.
I was so ready, but this Michael Douglas shit has got me fucked up.
Dude, Michael Douglas got everybody confused. He's so sultry. His buns are so shapely. You can't think straight when you got those buns on the sides, dude. All they can think about are those shapely buns, buddy.
Blister, I was going to congratulate you on keeping it professional for as drunk as you are, and then this happened.
God.
Michael Douglas gets everybody fucked up.
Oh. All right, I'm sorry. Oh. All right, The Orphanage, here we go. So The Orphanage starts out, we've got a group of kids. These are all like handicapped kids, they've got various disabilities, so this orphanage kind of takes them in, and I'm assuming they've got some specialists that sort of take care of them. One of our orphans gets adopted, and she grows up, and later on in life marries, and decides that they want to have their own kind of orphanage. They want to take in some kids, maybe not like a full-on orphanage, but they want to take in kids that have issues, kids that have sicknesses, just like what she grew up with. So they do that. They adopt a young boy, I can't remember his name.
Simon,
basically Simon. And he has an illness. He's HIV positive, we later find out. So they kind of take him in, and they're sort of trying to give him the best life they possibly can. They're visited by a strange social worker who says she's there to see Simon. We find out later that maybe she's not who she says she is. And through the rest of the movie, strange happenings are occurring. Simon is seeing an imaginary friend.
Tomas,
and he's got a lot of detail about this imaginary friend. Maybe, you know, he's really seeing somebody, maybe he's not. Simon goes missing, and the rest of the movie is kind of them trying to figure out what is going on in this orphanage.
Perfect.
That's all I got for you. That's a good one.
That was so beautiful.
This movie, fuck me. God, I love it.
This movie fucks you, Dylan?
Just like, who?
Okay.
Michael, stop it.
Stop. Do not encourage him.
Stop.
This movie was, I think, one of the few Spanish American releases that we got by virtue of, what's his name?
Guillermo del Toro.
Thank del Toro? You.
Yeah, del Toro produced this.
This was right
one.
Around like Pan's Labyrinth mm-hmm. time, so this was kind of like him hitting his big stride, I think.
Running off the coattails of that. I mean, he didn't produce it. Yeah, he didn't have anything to do with it other than
right, producing. But I think like because Pan's Labyrinth was so popular, like this movie did get brought to us,
and
which is great.
I am so grateful for that because I don't think that many people would have had the opportunity to see this movie otherwise, but I remember seeing it in theaters and being just fucking blown away by it. But I want somebody else to talk about it because I'm just going to start this off on this thing.
I'd like to start this off because I can't remember the first time that I watched this. It was it would have been right around the time that it came out, and I did like it. And I watched it again not too long ago, I think, with Dylan and Devin, and they fucking loved this movie, and they were gushing about it the entire time. And I remember not being like that sold on this. I remember thinking that it was overrated. So going into this the other night, I sort of expected to have the same viewpoint. But I do have to say, like, going into this right away, watching this now, I think maybe that we've done so many reviews and watched so many movies, maybe I have more of an appreciation for certain things. This movie is really, really good.
It's outstanding.
And you guys always said, awesome. Like, this movie is really, really scary, and I never agreed. This movie is fucking scary.
Yep.
I don't know why, but this time this movie scared me, and it didn't the other times. Maybe you guys can talk about why it's scary or like what makes this movie scary.
It's an interesting way, but yeah.
Well, I'm thinking about like Conjuring or any of the other, what's that guy's name?
James Wan.
James Wan. Like, there's a certain kind of like mastery to jump scares or the certain mastery to building up to a scare. Mm-hmm. And this movie does a lot of false starts. They'll mm-hmm. show you a really spooky cave and all little Billy running around in there. Okay, that's scary. They don't scare you. Okay, they're going to show you something else that's very benign and not scary, and then they're going to scare the fucking piss out of you.
Yep.
And this movie does such a good job of making the scares unpredictable that even now I'm watching it and I'm like, you know what, I'm a little buzzed. I'm a little scared right now. I'm not going to watch the screen when we're doing, let's look at the wall. What is it like? 1, 2, 3, knock on the wall.
Knock on the wall, yeah.
And there's a little game that the kids play and they bring it back in the movie where like she's looking at a wall, she looks back and ghost sees her behind her. And I'm like, you know what, I don't need to look back. I don't need to see what's behind her because I'm really scared right now.
And the strange thing about it is like the ghosts in this movie are not aggressive, really, for the
most part. They're just little kids.
I can definitely attest to the fact that this movie is fucking... I think it's a masterclass in scares, and I think it's jump scares among other kinds of different complicated types of scares. Mm-hmm. I will say there was a specific jump scare that probably made me jump out of my fucking ass more than any fucking jump scare I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
It has to do with the car.
Yeah, but also but what's great about it and the fact that it's so respectable is that it doesn't do just jump scares. It has some great ones, but there's another scene that involves Tomas, which is a long like shot being held on the fucking the hallway.
Oh my lord!
That's the opposite of a jump scare. That is equally as horrifying, but it's more lingering and more so fucking dreadful.
Tomas is just a really interesting bit of ghost design. That there's nothing overtly supernatural about him. It's a small child with like a sackcloth mask on his on his head in like an old dress. And for whatever reason, like the fact that he is so very physical looking is even more frightening. Like there's nothing, I think back to Del Toro's Devil's Backbone, which I really like a lot. And I love the ghost design in that, but you can tell from a mile away, this thing's a fucking ghost. This one, you're just like, there's this level of uncertainty that is really off-putting about the ghosts in this movie.
That's one of the things I want to address quickly. So I have actually watched a lot of Del Toro movies recently, and I'm not really a huge fan of his, actually.
I'm losing faith in him.
I thought I was. Right, it was like a Devin syndrome where I'm like, oh, yeah, I love Del Toro or whatever. I love Argento. Yeah, I love Argento. He's great. Yeah, but you all watch his movies and you aren't sold. But this movie feels like it has that Del Toro touch. It has the visuals that you crave and a lot of the kind of fantastical like fantasy elements. But it's super grounded. And one of the things I want to mention, like we're talking about terror, that's great. But one of the reasons that we're so engaged in the terror is because like the plot is constantly jumping and it's constantly moving. And there's like this kind of like little mystery that's unraveling and we're always engaged on what's going on.
That's true.
And that's
the mystery is incredible.
Engaged,
but this is the best Del Toro movie made, but it's not made by Del Toro, which kind of sucks. But that might be... That's why part of me was so huge into Del Toro, because I had this misconception that he directed The Orphanage. I was wrong. It's a huge shame, because this is a masterpiece of a horror film.
And it's just better. I think, though, the one thing that can't be oversold is the main actress, Belén Rueda, is fucking astounding
she's great.
This movie.
Yep, she's very good.
She carries it for the most part, because it's just basically a mother's grief at losing her child. Like Simone just goes missing. And that is really where most of the horror comes from. A lot of it is not ghosties jumping out of the walls at you.
Right.
It's just how terrifying it must be to lose a child or to feel like you failed as a parent.
Well, it's super grounded. Even at the end, I won't spoil anything, but there's a lot of scenes where they end the movie very, like, I guess, kind of in her arms, and it continues on. And it's just very, like, heartfelt, and it's very kind of Wake and Fright. Like, it's very real.
The ending makes me sob like a fucking baby every time I watch it.
That's what I love about this movie. It has a very dark ending, but it feels almost kind of uplifting.
So that's something that I wanted to kind of harp on a little bit, is that this movie is not only a masterclass in scares, and it's viscerally frightening, but it's a beautiful, beautiful film. I think Spanish films are often like that. Horror films specifically are very poignant, and they have very real real situations, and very
emotional.
Fucking,
it's
like,
very human.
Very emotional. Yeah, it's very human.
That, yes.
And this movie, although it is viscerally terrifying, which is great, it doesn't stop there. It's a beautiful film. It's just a great film in general.
If it didn't involve ghosts at all, if it didn't have anything supernatural, it would still be an incredibly compelling family drama.
Yes.
Well, that's one thing I actually wanted to really highlight quickly. So we're gushing or whatever, but There's the husband in this movie. He's actually a pretty big part, and there becomes a moment where he becomes separated from his wife because they have different ideas on how things should happen with the son. And in a lot of movies, they would just say, you know what, fuck you, husband, you're gone, and he would just leave the movie forever, and they would just excuse him. But it's a very, like, natural progression. He has a different idea about how they should go about progressing this, I guess, the search of their son. He goes off and does his thing. The wife does her thing, and it feels very believable.
It's not as if he's to blame or anything, because like they've established like he's working his ass off too.
He's not a
just
bad
in
guy.
Very different ways.
It's a very mature way to say, I respect what you're doing, but fuck you, we're going to go do this movie this other way. Yeah. And I like that a lot. It doesn't feel cheap.
I was trying to think of like a different word to use, but I do think the word mature applies to like almost every element of this movie, especially the way that they handle the ghosts, the way that like, I love the way that the ghosts and the supernatural stuff in this is sort of like, it's only scary because it's misunderstood. It's only scary because we don't understand it. And I think there's something to be learned there, of course. And every element of this movie is taken. They don't shy away from anything. Like there's one moment of like really intense gore.
Grisly, yeah.
And
that was surprising,
but it feels very earned, and it is surprising, but it all feels like it's very earned and it's very well thought out.
It's got all kinds of different scares too. We talk about the jump scares and everything. There's the long cons. And then there's this one scene that every time just makes me fucking shiver, where they bring in a medium, who's played by Charlie Chaplin's daughter. And she is walking throughout the house, like trying to hear the whispers of the children. And it just escalates to this point where it is like the sound design and everything. It is just so frightening.
It's heartbreaking. It's frightening. It's scary. It's dramatic. It's so fucking well done.
Yeah. I mean, the sound design in this movie is, I mean, obviously it's kind of its own little element. I don't know. I really liked a lot of the different, I guess, ghouly sounds and stuff.
The keening, like high-pitched shrill thing that happens sometimes when the ghost shows up.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, really good.
But also, it's Tomas. Him kind of like breathing and mumbling in his little sack, his like wheezing. It's so fucking well done. But I was just talking about that scene specifically that you talked about, Dylan. It is a very heartbreaking, wonderful scene, but also frightening. I think that's that movie. That's the movie in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. It's frightening. It's wonderful. It's heartbreaking. It's emotional. It's poignant. I don't know. There's so many things wrapped up in one in this fucking masterpiece of a film. I don't know.
I mean, ultimately, this comes down as like the number one movie that I recommend to people who don't like horror. Because I'm like, you're gonna get a fantastic movie regardless of what you're looking for.
Well, let's wrap up this masterpiece of a review.
All right.
Wow, thanks.
Sure. This is a masterpiece?
Absolutely,
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Getting a little ahead of yourself, but this is a staple in my top 10 favorite horror films every single year after year. I usually do my best to construct a top 10 favorite horror films in October. This is always on there, and I don't see any reason why it would slip out anytime soon, regardless that I binge watch dozens and dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of horror movies a year now. So it's still there. It's still top 10. It's a masterpiece. I don't want to repeat myself, sound like a broken record, but it's not just a viscerally scary film like a lot of the films that I love. It's just a beautiful film in general. It's got everything you want in a horror film and more, and I would recommend this to fucking literally everyone.
Yep.
Everyone. literally anyone. So I can't do anything but give it the strongest of gems. One of my favorite films ever. What do you think, Manton?
Just like Devin said, you know, Michael Douglas. I'm just kidding.
Don't fucking just start.
No, I wasn't too keen on going back to this movie. And like I said, I was kind of lukewarm on this movie before. I always liked it. I just thought maybe it was a bit overrated. But I don't know what it is about watching it this time. But I could really appreciate some of the elements that I didn't before for whatever reason. And because of that, this movie has kind of shot up a bit more for me. This movie is very, very, very good. Pretty much everything that this movie sets out to do, it does very, very well. This movie is going to get a strong gem from me. I don't really have much to add to what Devin said, but I pretty much agree with that. If you know someone that's not super into horror, that doesn't like horror, maybe you want to get them into it, or just show them why you like horror and like what a great horror movie can do for you, this is the one to show them. This movie is excellent. It's a strong gem.
All right, Bluchster, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I said it, but I've seen this movie a lot, actually. I've seen it probably 4 or 5 times at this point, and I was going into this review, and I'm like, all right, let's see what's wrong with this. And I was drinking, and I wasn't paying attention, but there's something about this movie that I love about... it's something that I look for in movies now, where they respect my time. They show me something, and they're constantly keeping me engaged. It isn't like me forcing myself to watch it. They just make me. They just engage me and they make me watch it, because this movie's only 1 hour and 30 minutes or so. And every single second, something is happening that's progressing the plot. It's either terrifying or beautiful or cool or whatever. I want to watch it. There's never a point where I feel like I need to walk away and do something else. It's from beginning to end, it's very engaging and beautiful and dark. And it has that Del Toro kind of spin. It's like a dark fantasy, but it doesn't get away from you. It's very grounded. And at the end of the day, we have a very dark and bittersweet ending. And it's I don't know, it leaves you feeling very twisted. And it leaves you thinking about other things that have happened in the movie. And I don't know, the whole movie kind of pays off in the end. It feels very good. So as much as I was ready to come in here and critique this movie, it's just too damn good. This movie is a gem. I can't imagine why I would not recommend this. And I think that even now, I've watched it several times, it's scary as shit. It's a good movie. It's a gem.
All right. Awesome. What do you think, Dylan?
It's suitable that we're ending with this one, because I think it's probably the strongest of the batch. This movie is not just one of my favorite horror movies. It's just one of my favorite movies. And I know that we gush about a lot of movies, but I can't overstate. I really think this movie's about perfect. I don't think there's a lot that they could have done better. And it's just it. Everybody needs to see it. It will respect your time, like Booster's saying. It's really good at that. It will respect everything you're looking for in a movie. I mean, it doesn't matter when you watch this. It doesn't have to be Halloween. It doesn't have to be a horror kind of concept. It'll fulfill everything you're looking for. It's fucking fantastic. It's such a strong gem.
Yeah, it's seriously everything. It's hysterical. It's a real funny fucking movie. Tons of comedy.
Well, yeah, maybe not the comedy.
It's got Adam Sandler. Oh my gosh,
Michael Douglas was great.
Michael Douglas is bare ass in this movie and hot damn.
When David Spade's cameo comes in at the end, are you kidding me?
God, oh yeah, Joe Dirtè.
Okay.
All right,
okay, we're gonna wrap it up now. Jesus, but we do have to get a game in real quickly, and the game is the
same. Can I just say before we do, I'm really proud of Bluchster for maintaining himself through this, you know, Michael Dadass thing notwithstanding. He's still sitting here.
He's getting
this cast.
Round of applause.
He didn't crawl off. Everybody, round of applause, please. Good job. He's still clapping for himself.
Listeners, if you heard the past few episodes, the same as we've done recently, where I'm going to have slang in each of their respective languages, or Australian slang, Canadian slang, what have you. And these guys get to figure out what it means or give a funny fucking translation. And I'm going to give a point to whoever I think has the best or most accurate one, or maybe the funniest one. I don't know. But we're going to start off with Australian slang. Tell me what it means if somebody bangs like a dunny door in a force 9 gale.
Jesus.
Yep. Wow. One more time. If someone bangs like a dunny door in a force 9 gale, what do you think, Manton?
I think that's someone who fucks like good old Michael Douglas. Like, he's great in the sack, you know?
Fuck you, Manton. That's exactly what I was going to say, dude.
Well, then say it.
Bluchster, what is
it? Someone who's good in the sack.
Okay, Bluchster?
I mean, it's the exact moment where you're presented with Michael Douglas's ass and you've got no choice but to go hard on that bitch. You're going to fucking waylay it, you're going to go hard, and you're gonna ravage it.
That's enough. What do you think, Dylan?
They're right. I'm not even going to try and top Bluchster on that one.
Jesus. I mean, it's just somebody who's attractive, sexually attractive, but...
Michael Douglas.
That was very scientific. I like it.
I'll give the points to Manton because he actually came up with it first, so whatever. And that brings
you asked him first.
That brings us to Russian. This is going to be hard for me. I can't wait to embarrass myself, but Russian... Tai Che Tsuka Okula Blah.
Wow. I don't know.
Tai Che Tsuka Okula Blah. That's what I got. That's the best I can do. What do you think that means, Dylan?
Pui. Tai Chi. It's when somebody's sucking you off while you're doing Tai Chi.
All right, Blaster, what do you think?
It's perfect for this week because it's, you know, I'm going to hit you like a Matrix vampire. That's exactly what it stands for. Like, just like our movie, what was that movie
Night Watch.
Night Watch.
Don't even know.
Didn't have Michael Douglas in it.
There was not a single Michael Douglas lookalike. Matrix vampire sex, basically.
Manton.
Damn, I'd love to see that.
What do you think,
that
Manton?
One's easy. It's, I got a dick like a can of Pringles.
Oh, boy.
What?
I don't know about that.
You heard me?
That's stout.
Like it's empty on the inside?
Once it pops, it just doesn't stop, dude.
Jesus Christ. It's it just means, are you fucking crazy asshole? And I'm going to give those points to Dylan because I liked it.
Oh, okay, I'll take them.
The next one is Canadian slang.
This is going to be in English, right?
Yeah, it is. Canadian.
Or French.
It's Canadian slang. It's what does it mean if you're a keener? K-E-E-N-E-R. Keener. What do you think that means, Manton?
Maybe you like butt stuff.
Awesome. Okay. Bluester?
You like Keno, the game. Nice. Very dangerous.
Yeah, I like to play Keno. I'm
You're a
keener.
Gambler.
Yeah, very good. The gambling game, the lottery. What do you think, Dylan?
That's when you put two words together, so it means you have a cool wiener.
Okay.
A keener?
No, it's a keener is a suck up, is what it is. And the points go to Manton. Very good.
Thank you.
Oh. I was trying so hard.
All right, the next one is Spanish.
I tried so hard.
Spanish is Me cago en todo lo que se menea. One more time.
God, your pronunciation is terrible.
Devin, say it to me sexier.
I'm not. I don't fucking speak.
I need
speak.
It sexier.
Okay. Me cago en todo lo que se menea.
Oh.
What does it mean, Bluester? What does it mean?
I am fulfilled. That's what it means.
For some reason, that was really good. I really liked that.
I am fulfilled.
Just the way you said it was really solid. What do you think, Dylan?
I've got nothing. I am fulfilled. It's going to win.
That's pretty. It's going to win. What do you think, Manton?
It's pretty solid. It's solid waste.
Oh, that's me.
No.
I don't know. I caught a couple words there because I know a little Spanish. But I don't know. I am so fulfilled, though.
First off, we all know Blue, so he gets the points for that. But it
that's
means
right.
I
yeah,
shit
that's
on
that's right.
Yeah. It means I shit on everything that moves.
I've also done that.
I love that.
I do like that.
How do you say that again?
Me cago en todo lo que se menea. That's pretty great.
I shit on everything that moves.
That's fucking hilarious. That's
I do like that.
Love it.
All right. Let's wrap it up, guys. Remember, guys, we are done with the Horrible Olympics, but we're going to have a voting thing this week to figure out who gets the bronze, silver, and gold. We already know Ju-On and Shudder are going to be in the top three, and help us figure out the last person, the last country, rather, in the top three out of the movies we just discussed, and then we'll kind of, again, pound out our first, second, and third place overall for the Horrible Olympics. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up this episode?
Was it about Michael Douglas, Bluester?
Oh, boy.
Dylan just beat me off to it. I mean, I was going to go right for Michael
All right,
Douglas.
Mercy kill this episode.
Let's kill it, guys. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. Add us there. Email and Twitter. You know that. Patreon. Support us. And on behalf of the Horrible Crew, thanks for listening and stay spooky.
Oh, Douglas.
Michael's dead ass.
That's true. Dead ass.